Welcome to the Beautifully Bold in Business podcast, where each week, Samantha Johnston, brand developer to the creative and confused, and Nicole Hoagland, small biz and confidence coach to the creatives, are having entrepreneurs share their real stories and tips about their honest and authentic success in business and how they have been able to lead boldly by being themselves. They are creating a movement to show you how to create your own version of success and empower you to be beautifully bold in your business.
Hey, thank you for listening to the Beautifully Bold in Business podcast. I'm Samantha.
And I'm Nicole.
And today we're joined by Rachel Brenke, who is an author, photographer, lawyer, and business consultant for photographers and bloggers. She is currently helping creative industry and blogging professionals all over the world initiate, strategize, and implement strategic business and marketing plans through various mediums of consulting, resources, and legal direction. You can find out more about Rachel at rachelbrenke.com. Hi, Rachel. It's so great to have you here today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So to get the conversation started, we always like to ask, what was the kickstart moment that got you going in your business?
About 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer, and I had been kicking around the idea of what I wanted to do with my life. And at that time, I was like, I really want to run my own business. And I was kind of doing some side things. I said, I really want to help other people run their business. And that's what I'm doing 10 years later. I decided it was time to grab a hold, do that, and also do something that I could be around for my family and be really flexible.
Awesome. Awesome. Where do you find your inspiration? Where does it come from to do what you do? Because I mean, you're so multifaceted. What made you go into those different areas?
It's kind of a long-winded answer, but the short of it is that I started out just helping. I always liked research and understanding the legal side and then the like just strategy in general. I absolutely love strategy. And so when I was starting out, I had, this was in the day of MySpace. I just laugh because I think about how bad my MySpace profile looked and how that was one of my offerings to people that I was consulting is that I could custom create a MySpace profile for them. And they were hideous. They were horrible. And so I apologize to anybody at that time, but people loved it. It's what you did, right?
And I love it.
So I just was doing that and people were asking me questions all the time. What do I need for this state? What do you think on strategy this? And then the cancer thing happened. And so I was like, I could do this. But as I went along, I went and got my MBA. I was still doing general business stuff because we run multiple businesses and aren't necessarily in the same industry. So I stayed pretty general. And then when I went to law school, I started doing photography. Business consulting kind of had to take a back burner, I guess, because it takes a lot of time. Well, so does law school. And so I started doing photography. I loved it, enjoyed it as a hobby before I started doing it as a business. And of course, then it wasn't just photography. Photographers knew I was in law school, knew I did business consulting. So they were asking these questions. And then that went to me working and doing what I do now with photographers. And then those photographers are also bloggers and I'm a blogger for my business. So it kind of just all like built upon itself. Told you it was long-winded. It's not a short answer. I work with general businesses, but I really do specialize with photographers, creatives, and online blogging.
I know. It's really amazing to find someone who's just so well-versed in everything that, like, you're able to really help, you know, a bunch of different people in whatever industry they might be in. What do you turn to when it comes to finding not just the inspiration, but the positive support system that you have within the business? So who do you turn to or what do you turn to?
I've always been a very, strong-willed. I am strong-willed, very motivated, ambitious type person. And so I was really lucky to have married someone that's very supportive. So anytime that things aren't going well, he's someone that I can talk to. And then on top of that, I just have known, and this is still a learning process. I still get bit every day, but I try to surround myself with like-minded people who are also ambitious, who I don't feel like I have to ask their permission to do something with my own career that are positive about me, but will also be quick to rip something apart and tell me if I'm doing something that could ultimately hurt my business or hurt someone else. And so that's really nice to just surround myself in those, I guess, three areas. Keep who I am, married, luckily. I chose well. I'll take credit for that. I chose well. And then the people I surround myself with.
Awesome. Supportive husbands are always the best, especially when you want to do things for yourself. It sounds like honesty is a really big value for you, not just in how you present yourself in business, but with, you said, surrounding yourself with people who will build you up, but also tear you a new one if it's really something that they don't think is going to be good for you. What are some other values that play into your business?
Well, you know, honesty, trust, and communication. I know this sounds also like cliche and out there, but it's so funny because that's what I wrote down when I first started doing all this. Those were the key things I wanted in my business. And as I've become a boss, I you know I have team members that I grow and groom and they work for me. But as the, I guess, quote unquote, corporate culture has grown, those are the three things that it really rests upon. Really important to me. And when I go to interview someone, or even if I just go to get into a business relationship with somebody, even if it's something small, I'm going to go and ask questions that are formulated based on what, how can I see how this person would respond and would they respond with these three, four elements? Because they are super important.
That's awesome. I love that you haven't really even compromised on that since you've started your business, that these are really kind of what you wanted to shape your business as. And it still to this day is an important part of how you go about and do things, whether it's new opportunities or hiring new employees.
You know, it's really difficult too, because sometimes people do surprise you. And I alluded to it a little bit ago about, you know, surrounding yourselves with people that you believe you can trust and communicate with, and that they are going to go hard for you and I'll go hard for them. And sometimes it'll bite you. And I think the hardest part of business is I'm stumbling because I feel like I struggle with the people pleaser side, but then I also know that the business is really important. I don't want that to fall. And I've had relationships in the past that I've had to, I find out something about maybe someone's business ethics, and it may not be illegal, but just how they handle a situation. And I have to sever ties. And that's really hard for me when I have committed my time and energy into someone. But I also have to remember at the end of the day, the only thing that I have really is my name. The only thing I have is a reputation that I've built, and it's not worth, you know, potentially losing that over a small business relationship.
To be able to sever ties and say no and kind of stand in your power, knowing that even though you invested your time, that this is the best decision for you. I mean, that's great advice for entrepreneurs who are just starting out that might feel drawn to just saying yes all the time or getting into relationships and not really being comfortable with getting out of it. So I love the fact that you're able to kind of boldly share that.
And I say it, you say I boldly share it, but I struggle. It's very hard. I had to do one of these severings week before last, and it still kills me because I fall in love with people as people. And then when, you know, something like this happens, it hurts me on a personal level as well. And yeah, you're supposed to separate it out, but you can only separate so much.
But you know what? You're also only human, and the emotions that come along with severing a tie, especially when you've not only invested your time, but you've also invested a part of your life into it. Like, you've basically invited this person into your life, because most of the time that falls into what your business is doing. So it's normal for the fact that you would have such an emotional tie with actually severing it. But the fact that you know that it's no longer serving you is also a good thing.
I love that. You guys have going back and forth. And I think you've hit on so many great points about value and relationships, and especially as entrepreneurs. I mean, you talk about trying to separate out the emotion from the business side, but we are our business. So it's one thing. It's not something that you can easily separate. And I love that. So I would like to ask you, can you share a time when at some point in your career, maybe you had some negative self-talk that you had to work through? Some sort of advice even for our listeners if they're dealing with it?
Yeah, I mean, as recent as this past week, my new podcast launched, and it's so funny that it's a project I've been sitting on for almost 2 years because I was worried that it was going to fail. And I had planned, I had done everything, and I had a whole strategy, and my team kept saying, just do it. You've planned, you've done it. And I was like, but it just doesn't feel like the right time. And so finally, one of my assistants said to me, I hate to call her assistant, she really is a friend and, you know, team member. She looked at me and said, what are you actually waiting for? And I was like, I don't know. And she goes, I think you're just letting negative thoughts get in the way. And it's true, because we've had a lot of failed projects this year. And I don't share that as a parent, maybe as I should to the public. You know, you always want to share the happy, good things, but for every one good one that happens, you have 20 or 30 things that have failed. And we have a list of things that just, I mean, they may not have failed, but they haven't turned out as successful. So when Pam said that to me, and she goes, what exactly are you waiting for? Why exactly are you telling yourself that this is going to be a failure before it ever happens? That's not even my words. That's her. That's exactly what I would tell anyone else and I've always said this, the ultimate rejection is you telling yourself no. So if you don't put it out there, it's already failed. You have made it fail.
I mean, I love that. Yeah, that is extremely powerful for our listeners, because it's that fear of failure that tends to stop everyone from doing everything. So the fact that you actually are just putting it out there and trying, no matter if it comes back as a success or as a failure, then that fear is kind of negated because you at least tried to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and that's the thing. And if, to carry through the example on this, is that I didn't want to put it out there. I sat on it forever. Then finally I was like, let's do it. And I pushed it out there. And within 48 hours, it was number 6 in the business section on iTunes. And Pam kind of goes, what'd I tell you? And I'm like, yeah. You know, but I also think part of that is the strategy and the implementation of it. I was so aggressive with it because I had a little bit of fear. So I think the fear can drive you. You just have to know how you respond to the fear. For me, I respond relatively well. Like, actually, the fact that I didn't publish sooner and I was incapacitated by fear of it was really strange, because that's not typical for me. But a lot of entrepreneurs do this. And actually, I would say the most people that I work with, they're completely incapacitated by fear. Then on the other side, you have people who are typically like me in a typical situation will take it and use that as a springboard. So knowing your fear and how you respond to it is how you're going to be able to strategize to make things happen. I just knew that I was so scared. I was putting myself out there with big names. It's easier to hide in my own website, my own little corner of social media, but to put it on something like iTunes and Stitcher and those sort of places, I didn't feel like I didn't have as much control. So the more aggressive I got, the better it actually, I became more aggressive because of the fear. And the more aggressive I got on the strategy, the more successful it actually happened. That's not to say it's always going to happen that way, but knowing that will help people when they feel fear to determine, how am I going to respond to this so I can turn it into a positive.
You know, you touched on the fact that having it in places like iTunes and Stitcher and whatnot, that you didn't have as much control. Is that part of the fear that kept you incapacitated?
Yes, I hate it.
Like, to have that control?
I hate it. Mm-hmm. Because you're completely at the mercy at any moment. iTunes and Stitcher and all the other ones that I'm still waiting on approval for, they could just pull me and delete it. And I would lose all the subscribers and everything that I had worked towards, which of course is really, it crosses over to my audience. So that's where my responsibility comes into play, that I have to work hard to convert those people to my site and to my emails. And, you know, but it just, yes, it's very scary to know that I'm putting the potential success of this in this arbitrary mythical hand in the sky, Apple, and hope that it'll actually work for me, because I'm putting my time and energy into it.
I can definitely relate to that. In your journey, who has been your biggest influencer?
I don't know. I feel like everyone has a person for a certain segment of their life. I think that my dad and my grandmother is his mom. She just passed away from cancer this year. And I feel like they have been my biggest cheerleaders, on top of my husband. Obviously, we've already established he's like number one supporter. But my dad and my grandmother have always really, truly supported and told me that I could do anything that I wanted to do, and that I didn't need other people's permission to succeed. And I think that always is in the back of my mind. One thing my grandmother has always said, and I have it on my wall, it's wherever you go, there you are. So no matter what your circumstances are, no matter anything else, what you've done and what you've worked for or haven't worked for, or who you want to become or you have become, when you get there, you're there. Like, that's you. You have control over a good amount of that, and you have control over who you are and how you respond to things. So that's been a big influence, and that comes around to the whole honesty, communication, and trust, and that's who I wanted to be, and that's the message that I want to carry.
I love it. What advice would you give beginning entrepreneurs, or even anybody who's been stifled by the fear or the doubt? What advice would you give them to help them move forward in their business?
I think making a plan and putting the plan with deadlines is really important. And then on top of that, you could add on an accountability partner. Just make sure there's someone that's actually you can trust to talk to. Because I've had a business partner in the past who I thought I could have those core values with, and actually ended up bringing me down, and we had to sever ties. And to me, as long as you're discerning and you really understand that you have a plan, you've written out your plan, you have your deadlines, you actually have people who are going to hold you accountable and be there for you, that's what's going to make it happen. I truly, even as ambitious as I am, I think I can only carry myself so far. And as entrepreneurs, a lot of us are type A and think, oh, we can take on the world. But at the end of the day, you really do need a support system to get there.
Yeah. And it sounds like not only just a support system, but trusting in yourself too, because just like you said, they're being incapacitated with fear and whatnot, and just having that trust that no matter what you're doing, you're putting it out there, and the support around you that you built is going to be help you kind of create that success that you want. I mean, that's just something that our listeners are going to eat up, because it really is true. Fear is going to be there no matter what.
Well, you know, and another thing too is I just think back to how this was a 2-year project in the making, and you can't, sometimes you can just jump into projects, or you can spend all this time planning, but the results may still be the same. It just depends on the foundation you've laid. But to give results time, because yeah, it may have hit the top of iTunes, but have I really seen, at the time of this recording, have I really seen any return from it yet? I don't know. It's too early to tell, but I can't turn around and go, oh, man, sales haven't spiked. I must be doing something wrong, when it's only not even been a week. You have to be realistic. There is something to be said for being ambitious, but also being realistic. And that's where the other people come in. They can look at me and go, I think you're shooting a little too high. Like, let's have a shoot high goal, and let's have like a realistic goal. That way we still have a little bit perspective, because if you shoot for too high sometimes, you're not okay with anything else. You're not okay with good. You only want best. You may always feel like a failure, and that will stifle you from moving forward on anything else.
Yeah. And sometimes those too high of a goals can almost be unattainable. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of puts you back into the place of inaction, because you just know it's never going to happen for you.
I absolutely love that. In some of the business calls that I've had, that's some of the things that I've chatted with people about is, you know, like, well, I just opened this website, but it's not converting to sales yet. Well, give it time. How long has it been out there, and what are you doing? And don't just say the website isn't working and I'm done. You know, what can you change? What can you tweak? Let's, you know, fine tune it. But you always have to give things time to set. It's almost like pouring concrete, you know, it's not instantly dry. Give it time, otherwise you're going to sink into it. So, sorry, construction background.
No, that's actually a perfect example too, but you also let people know that you poured the concrete, that you've built the house. You know, you need to tell them the address. You need to tell them why they need to come see it. You know, so you'll get an amount of an audience that will come and see podcasts, for example. They'll come and look at it because they followed me. But for them to stay, I have to tell them and show them why it's important and what it's going to do for them. And yeah, that's really big, because I think a lot of times, especially maybe if you guys have listeners who are at a place where they've grown past a lot of this and they feel really successful, really consistent, it's easy to become complacent. And this is referring back to what I was talking about with the failed projects this year, is that you can get complacent to believe that anything you put out, people will buy into, but that's not the case. You need fresh eyes to look at each project to know that you never know how it'll respond. I've had projects I've poured time and energy into, and it's crickets. Even though I've shared and marketed, and then there's other things that I'm just kind of like, oh, here we go, and people love. And so I'm like, you're talking about going back and evaluating and looking at it, not just telling people about it, not just relying on them to come to it because of who you are, or maybe they're a friend of a friend, but why is it that they're there? You know, what is the reason that they're coming for this? And that's something that's always fun, but it's also really scary, because especially when we get intertwined with the projects we love and those ones don't pan out so well.
And I mean, to go back just to, I mean, we were doing construction analogies, so why not put this in here? But you have to continually furnish and like put time into it, because over time, there are things that are going to start happening to that foundation that you have to work at, and just know that you can't just necessarily like build it and leave it. Because yes, you can build it and they will come, but you also want them to continually come knock and ring that doorbell and walk into a place that's welcoming and they know that they're getting value out of it.
I think one of the things the couple of times that I've gotten really overwhelmed with business was that right there. But it was getting to the point of going, okay, I know I got this audience, but now I need to know, who am I trying to reach now? And I actually kind of go in waves from 1 year to the next, but it's one year I work on casting my net really wide. Can I get the most amount of people to get into the door? And then the next year I'll work on drilling deep with those people. And I've gone to the point that it's a more of a tandem process now, but in the beginning, I feel like people feel like they have to just gather a lot of numbers, a lot of sales, a lot of clients. So they're going wide, 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 wide all the time, when in reality is they already know you and they trust you. They are actually two or three more times more likely, I need to find the research on it, to purchase and buy into you later on. And so if you're constantly just casting your net wide and looking for new people, but not cultivating the people that you have, that's when business will also grow stagnant. So just for me, that's been a learning process. Wide and deep. And now I'm finally doing both. Like, feel like I'm perfecting the process of both. I mean, there's still things to learn, but that's really important.
It's totally true. And it's, as entrepreneurs, I feel like it's so much more based on the relationships that we build with our client and audiences, because we don't have a big brand name out there that everybody knows. We have to create that. And in order to create that, we have to create the relationships, and we have to build that know, like, trust. And it's a step-by-step process. It's not like they're going to instantly be like, I love this person and buy from us. It takes time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once you kind of build on that and they trust you enough, they're also going to help you cast your net wider, because they're going to be out there telling their audience just how much they value and trust, you know, anything that you bring to the table. So it's just, it's fine tuning that balance to make sure you're cultivating those relationships, but then also having them help you cultivate new relationships because you can trust the people they're bringing in.
And I think that's the hardest part for me, is that I really like to work one-to-one with people, but I only have so much time in the day. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard for me to turn people away or send them to more of a passive resource, because that's what I love to do. And I've tried bringing consultants in under me to also, that I've trained to also hands-on. People didn't want them. They wanted me. And so I'm like, well, I'm back at the same problem, which is a good problem to have, because I, you know, spent the time cultivating the relationships and branding me. But it is hard, because then I have a long waiting list of people, and they're like, well, we need help now. And I'm like, I only have so much time.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes perfect sense that is for people who are just starting out, or people who are kind of stagnant, to show that even if you have a waiting list and you have everything going right for you, it's still the guilt of not being able to help everyone, because we all got into our businesses for a reason, and it's to help or solve something that we saw a need for. And to not be able to do that for each and every person, that's definitely, you know, a guilt that weighs heavy on everyone that owns a business.
So, you know, and I've also been one of those people that I never wanted to be out of touch. So while everyone tells me, and I tell even the people I consult, is that, you know, you need to get help on certain tasks. Well, email is one of them, because I get hundreds of emails, and not thousands some days. But it's hard for me, because I want to know, I want to see what's coming through. Like, we've tried the compilation of top issues, top compliments, feedbacks of this, but I still will go in there and dig in and respond to customer emails. And I love when they're like, what, you, Rachel, you respond? I'm like, yeah, like, I don't want to be a faceless thing. It's still really important to me. Some days I can get sucked into email a little too much, but and the team's like, give it back. But I like to know that, because I want to know what the true issues and what people want, and actually listen. And I think that that's maybe a detriment to me, but I also think it helps the, not the selling, but I guess the marketing and branding of who I am, because it's true. I mean, that's what you see is what you get. Yeah. So, but that's a weakness of mine right now, is being able to give up a little control over emails.
It's that type A personality coming out again.
Me, no.
I think that's also part of the lawyer in you.
Yeah.
I noticed a lot of lawyers with the control and type A personality. I've got a couple of those in my family, so I know.
You know, that's funny, is working with photographers and creatives, they're pretty laid back. So when I go to lawyer events now, I'm like, God, you people are so high strung and so crazy. Let me go back to my creatives.
Yeah, you got two different personalities and fields there. It's
kind of like Clark Kent and Superman. Like, I kind of get the best of
Dr. Jekyll and Mr.
Hyde. Well, maybe that.
Yeah. Exactly. It's very much me and my sister. My sister's the lawyer type A. Everything has a place in her house. And me, my house is a little bit messy, and I'm just like creative and free flow and kick back. Yeah, we're two totally different personalities. I've loved this conversation. You've had so many great tips and advice for our listeners, and I just absolutely love it. But to wrap things up, I want to get a little bit fun and ask you, if your life was produced into a movie, who would play you and why?
I don't know. I like Rachel McAdams off of The Notebook, but I think I'm drawn to her because people say we kind of look like each other, and it's my favorite movie. But I just think she's fun and spirited and emotional and high-strung.
Yeah, I was going to say, she does. You guys do have that kind of similar look and whatnot, so I could totally see that.
Good. Just a spawn off of that, what would the movie be about? It's not actually part of our normal questions, yeah. But I wanted to toss it in there.
The girl who takes on too many projects and ends up into an insane asylum. Kind of a cross of A Beautiful Mind. And what's the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio where he's on in like the psych ward?
Oh, On the Island, right?
Yes.
Oh my God, what's the name of that?
Yeah, but it would pretty much kind of be like the craziness like that, because that's how it feels like sometimes.
Well, you've written, is it two books or three books or how many?
I have three kids' books and two business books.
Oh my goodness, more than I knew about. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can imagine that with all the many projects that you have out there, you definitely would.
Bulls and lulls. That's the funniest part, is that the whole first of this year, we had some of the failed projects, and then I think they felt more like failures because we didn't really have a lot of things launching because we were working on it all. But then the last month has been the podcast, one of the children's books, one of the business books, you know, changing of business, like our team structure. We decided to make it a different type of structure, and it's just been like, craziness. It's great craziness, though.
And it's the perfect time because as we hit towards the end of summer, and by the time everybody listens to this, it will already be past this point, but everything seems to ramp back up and get right back into the swing of things right around September when all of our kids head back to school and the house gets a little bit quieter. So, but thank you so much. I've had a blast talking with you today. And for those listening, you can find more in our show notes at thebeautifullygoldpodcast.com. And to continue the conversation, go ahead and join us over at the Beautifully Bold in Business Facebook group. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rachel.
Thanks for having me. Y'all have a good one.
Let's get you leading beautifully and boldly in your life and business. Head on over to beautifullyboldpodcast.com for more information about this episode, show notes, and resources on how to be beautifully bold in your business. There you can also learn more about the two beautiful women behind the movement. If you liked what you heard today, then head on over to iTunes and leave Nicole and Samantha a review. It's the little things that can have a huge impact, and your review would mean so much to them. This music is provided by bensound.com.